Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another roundtable discussion. This is a part of the Justice Humber series. My name is Steve Duggan. I'll be the moderator today. Joining us today are Inspector Peter Code of the Toronto Police Service and Staff Sergeant Kimberly O'Toole of the Toronto Police Service and Dr. Doug Thompson from the Justice Studies program here at Humber College. Greetings, welcome to everyone. And really what we're going to talk today about is ethical investigations. Can successful investigations be ethical? That's the question that we're trying to answer today. But before we get there, I would ask our guests to briefly give a little introduction of themselves.
Hi, good morning. My name is Peter Code. I'm an inspector with the Toronto Police Service, and currently the position that I hold is the officer in charge of the conduct section of our professional standards, which sometimes commonly is referred to internal affairs.
And my name is Kimberly O'Toole, and I am a staff sergeant with the Toronto Police Service. I'm currently at 55 Division in charge of a uniformed platoon, which is a shift of frontline officers, and we are a central lockup for the female prisoners in the city of Toronto. And in my spare time, my part-time job is teaching at University Guelph Humber in the Justice Studies program, where I've been there now for 9 years.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, I guess we should really start off with this question. I'll just throw it out to the table. Investigations conducted by police officers are critical for the maintenance of law and order. We all understand that, and we also know that police officers are there to seek the truth into what has actually occurred in an incident. But does ethics really play a role in investigations? And Peter, I'll ask you.
Well, if we're speaking specifically about investigations and not just day-to-day police activity, which I think we'll probably cover a little bit later on in the conversation. But in relation to investigations, absolutely. All investigations have a sense of ethics in relation to them. Officers are expected to conduct themselves in an impartial way, and ethics always leads itself into the decisions that are made through an investigation. So absolutely, yes.
I think just to build on what Inspector Code has said is that we must lay the foundation for our investigation at the very basic level, the very beginning of the investigation. We must conduct ourselves ethically, because if we don't, when we get to the point in the investigation that we arrest someone, we get to the point that we go to court and we're put before a judge and perhaps a jury, they scrutinize absolutely everything that we do. And if our investigation on all levels is not ethical, then we run into problems of the analogy of the fruit of the poison tree. And if you find yourself in a position at court and your investigation is found to not be ethical, there's going to be ramifications, whether they're charter remedies or whether charges are stayed or withdrawn based on your conduct.
So from listening to both of you, what I'm hearing is that ethics will ensure that you don't put a pair of blinders on and you get tunnel vision and you start going down the wrong path for the investigation, because ethics constantly tells you to challenge yourself to say, is this an ethical investigation that I'm doing? That you're not fabricating or creating or going down any investigatory lead.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's not just a matter of avoiding tunnel vision. It's just about making good, sound decisions during an investigation and making sure that you're acting in a way that if any member of the public was to scrutinize or take a look at what you've just done, how it would stand up and whether or not your actions or your inaction would be criticized or thought of as correct. So absolutely, tunnel vision is an entirely different conversation, one that we can get into, but certainly it's something that we are aware of, something that has been brought to our attention through numerous inquiries, and one that that takes a large portion of our criminal investigative training.
So, but how do you train a police officer to be ethical? Do you, like in police college, is there a course on ethics? Do you train them on the job when they arrive in the station? How do you teach them to be ethical?
A lot of ethics will come with a person before they arrive to the Toronto Police Service. And of course, that's going to be part of our screening process of candidates that wish to become police officers. But then once that person is selected to go into our training program before being sworn in as an officer, there are numerous simulations that are done both at the Ontario Police College and also at the Toronto Police College that will show what kind of decision-making process each candidate has. And these processes or simulations are done in open classrooms so that other people can watch, observe, and then comment later on in relation to the decision-making process that a person had. Once the person is sworn in, though, I think that especially when it comes into training in relation to criminal investigation, ethical decision-making is actually trained. It's actually spoken about, it's reviewed, and good strategies are given to officers to be able to ensure that they embark on an ethical decision-making process during investigations.
And some of that is, of course, mandated training by the province, and some of that is generated by our college. But from a divisional and a frontline policing aspect, as a staff sergeant in charge of a uniformed platoon, myself and my supervisors are constantly monitoring our officers, ensuring that they're conducting themselves in an ethical manner. So there are many checks and balances along the way. Once someone passes the competitive hiring process, is actually hired by our service, there are checks and balances along the way in all stages of your career to ensure that you're behaving in an ethical manner and conducting yourself in an ethical manner when you're dealing with members of the public. So not only myself, my supervisors, your own colleagues within the environment that you work in, as well as members of the public.
How does someone, when they arrive to be recruited, how do they prove that they're ethical? Do you ask them, are you ethical? And you wait for them to say, no. Oh, yes. And how
that's,
do you prove it?
That's exactly what we do. We just ask them, are you ethical? And as long as they say yes, then basically we give them the badges, then swear them in, and then they're on the streets the next day. It's a good question, and it's not as easy as one would think, and a lot of it will also dictate background investigations into a person before they become a police officer. A lot of it will have to do with reference checks. So when an officer comes, or a potential candidate to become an officer comes to our doorstep wishing to seek employment, they have to provide a number of references. And so then we can go back and do character checks, we can do character references and so on. And then from there, it's really dependent on those training constables and training sergeants as early as the Toronto Police College and then the Ontario Police College to be able to watch and observe how people react and how they act in certain scenarios. When a person is able to get through the process and graduate and are sworn in as a police officer, they go on a very rigorous one-year probation where a training constable, an officer that specializes in training, is actually assigned that officer. And their job is really to observe, provide guidance, provide good instruction, but they also have to report back to supervisors in relation to how that officer is doing. And one of the areas that they have to speak to is ethical decision making. So it's something that's not kind of put at the back burner. It's certainly forefront in the officers' minds, the training officers' minds, when they're watching these officers conduct themselves in that first year of probation. And during that first year of probation, there is the ability to mentor, to train, to bring up areas that may be weak in an officer, to strengthen them. But there's also a process to be able to discipline in relation to if there is misconduct, and there's also a process to let go of the officer in relation to a firing process. So there's, it's something that is thought of and considered, I'd say, very much in the forefront, especially during those first few stages of an officer's career.
So, Kim, just building on what Peter was saying, how are ethics enforced on constables that deal with routine street inquiries? So, in other words, how are officers who are on the street, frontline patrol, what systems or what levels of supervision are put in place that these training constables can pick up and little cues? Because it sounds like ethics is really on-the-job training.
I agree that it is on-the-job training. It's always going to be a large component of your employment, but you must have that ethical foundation first.
Yes.
To be hired and to then be able to build on. So from a divisional perspective, from a frontline perspective, we have several levels. As Inspector Code was speaking, we have coach officers. Recruits are with coach officers for a 10-week period. There's two coach officers, 5 weeks each, and they give very detailed reports with regards to how these officers are doing and how they're able to make their decisions in dealing with members of the public. And then once we pass that 10-week period, we have frontline supervisors that are on the road, that are attending radio calls, that are observing the conduct of our officers and ensuring that they are behaving ethically. So we have a number of checks and balances in place. Coach officers are one of them. Your colleagues, as I mentioned in the previous discussion, is another level. We have frontline supervisors who are my sergeants, myself, but we also have members of the public We often have members of the public that make complaints with regards to officers' conduct and make allegations, which is most typical during a traffic stop. An officer was rude or didn't behave in a fair and impartial manner or treated them differently for a particular reason. And we at the station, my supervisors and myself, I deal with people, thankfully not a lot of people, but I deal with people that call the station, come to the station, and they want to complain. And quite often, it's not actually a question that the officer behaved unethically or that they weren't fair and impartial. It's the perception that the individual has that dealt with the officer. And often I find it's a lack of communication and a lack of explanation as to why the officer is doing what they're doing. And often I can satisfy the individual at the front counter of our station and they can walk away feeling better that the officer wasn't unethical or impartial in the way that they've dealt with them. But we also have issues in the way that the officers conduct themselves off-duty that then may affect their ability to do their job fair and impartially. And sometimes the decisions that these officers make are very poor decisions, but not necessarily based on, you know, a bad person, a person with unsound ethics. They make a decision that affects their ability to do their job negatively.
Like what, for example?
So I have had in the most recent past decisions about taking time off, not being... We have a certain level of officers that we have to operate with that is mandated, that is safe on the road. And this one particular officer wanted time off and we said, no, operationally, we can't do it. And then the officer called in sick. So, you know, I take that opportunity to deal with that individual officer, but I also then take the opportunity to deal with the rest of my shift and the rest of my platoon and make it a teaching moment and discuss, without getting into the specifics of that individual situation, but discuss the general scenario as to why this is a bad decision and how it affects everyone negatively and not just the actual individual. So there's all kinds of scenarios that could be viewed as potentially unethical, and I think we have to be really careful when we talk about officers that are unethical as opposed to officers making bad decisions. And in this case, it's not the case that the officer is unethical. He just made a bad decision.
So with the one aspect, one of the questions that students always ask me is that, is it legal to lie to a police officer?
I guess that it would depend on the circumstances surrounding that lie that you're speaking about. If it's part of a investigation and you are being lawfully detained, or perhaps you've been arrested, or even if, for that matter, I'd say even a person reporting a crime. If you are in those circumstances, and when you say lie, that's a broad definition, yeah. But when you speak of intentionally misleading an officer, if you intentionally mislead an officer in the cases of reporting a crime that did not happen, alleging that a crime happened and indicating that a person committed the crime when in fact they had not, that actually is covered by the criminal code, and that's an offense against the criminal code.
So, can police officers lie to suspects when they're being interviewed?
Well, I find it very interesting, the sequence of your questions. Absolutely, they can, but under very rigorous checks and balances.
So is there a difference between like a good lie and a bad lie in terms of investigations?
Okay, and again, are we speaking now about the police officer lying or the member of the public lying?
Well, let's start with the police.
Okay. So is there a good lie versus a bad lie? I would suggest there is a lie or a false representation made by a police officer to a person that is, let's say, in custody and facing a criminal charge, that depending on what is actually said or what is misrepresented, if there is a situation where the administration of justice is brought into disrepute, then absolutely it's a bad lie. It would actually go to the admissibility of the statement itself. It's interesting that you bring that up in relation to confession law. The Supreme Court of Canada has put out a multitude of cases that specifically speak to confession law. And in one of them, it speaks about good lie and bad lie. And in this case, which is Rothman, the Supreme Court of Canada speaks to how trickery is something that is required in the questioning of suspects and accused persons by the police. Because quite often, the people that you are speaking to are not novices in the criminal world. They've done they've been through systems before. They've been through processes before. And in those cases, trickery then needs to be weighed by the courts in relation relation to whether they've crossed, the police officers have crossed the line or not. Mr. Justice Latimer says that in one case, crossing the line would be purporting yourself to be a lawyer. So if a police officer was to come into an interview room with a suit and tie and a briefcase and walked in and said, I'm your duty counsel, I'm here to represent you, I can give you legal advice, what happened? And that was the basis for, let's say, the false representation by the police officer in order to get a confession, then absolutely, that would not withstand court scrutiny. In the same regard, posing as a member of a religious group, purporting yourself to be a member of the clergy, and therefore asking for a confession almost as a religious process.
What about, I mean, you often see this on TV programs where they say, we have this evidence, but they don't actually.
Well, that's interesting, because the Supreme Court's been very specific about that, in which there's two different things. If you are going to provide evidence that could later be found to be inadmissible. So let's say I would come in to speak to you and say, I have a witness, Staff Sergeant O'Toole, and she has said A, B, and C. If the Staff Sergeant has actually said those things, but it was gathered in an inappropriate fashion, it would never make it to court because it would be inadmissible. That is one thing, and the Supreme Court is not so fast to overrule that. They're stating that that's